This week, the precious metals rally continued for the eighth consecutive week, with silver closing at the highest point in 4 months and the Dow Industrials adding 350 more en route to 22,000. Welcome back, everyone. It's a pleasure to be with you again this weekend. Your host, Chris Waltzek. Two more big guest interviews follow. For years, we've heard pundits discuss $50 silver and even triple-digit silver, but my first guest this week makes a solid case for four-digit silver. According to Bix Weir, silver could trade at 1-to-1 or even better with gold, making AG a potential 100-fold investment opportunity. So a $10,000 investment today could just yield $1 million in the years ahead. His work indicates there's more gold reserves above ground than silver. Plus, paper shenanigans is just one more reason to back up the truck on silver. He says thanks to advanced financial derivatives and sophisticated algorithms, the Fed and Treasury control the precious metals markets. Then Rob Kirby returns to the show. He sees extreme risks to the financial markets. Even the mainstream press is starting to acknowledge the manipulation behind the precious metals. Plus, we discuss the Bitcoin phenomenon, one of the few remaining de facto free markets out there, and one of my favorite Alva Stocks newsletter picks. And we'd like you to call into our Q&A hotline, 641-715-3900, followed by our extension number you'll need here, 514049. The number again, 641-715-3900, followed by extension 514049. And Robert Ian wraps up the show with his latest must-hear report. GoldSeek.com radio begins now with a market weather recap. Visibility virtually unlimited over the precious metals yet again for the eighth week in a row following weaker than expected unemployment numbers. Gold finished at the highest close of the year and the best in over 3 months, adding $3, finishing at $12.39, while silver gained about 14 cents, just shy of 1%, finishing the week over 18 an ounce. The precious metals XAU shares ended at $92.56, bucking the trend off about 3%, just 3 points. Black gold finished near break-even again at around $54, and the chart just remains wildly bullish. Along with the CRB index, we're expecting a run potentially 270 and perhaps even as high as 90. Meanwhile, the Fed chairman Janet Yellen testified 2 days this week on Capitol Hill, noting the policymakers' plan to hike rates in the overnight lending rate 3 times this year. Nevertheless, according to the Fed funds futures contracts, the plan sounds a bit ambitious. Traders do not expect more than 2 rate hikes currently, beginning no sooner than June of this year, and perhaps 1 additional hike later in the year. In related news, mostly solid economic reports pushed equities sharply higher in the week, including housing and regional manufacturing. Still, the national jobless benefits claims inched up 239,000, and a top leading indicator, housing starts, fell 2.6% in January. The Fed Vice Chair Stanley Fischer further corroborated the need for rate hikes, but the jawboning was just unable to spark a rally in the greenback as investors ignored the chatter, preferring instead the safe haven investment class. On another note, an interesting article this week showed that the tiny nation of Kazakhstan is attempting an economic experiment. The central bank is pushing for citizens to own at least 3.5 ounces of gold, which it's attempting to purchase for them. And of course, the yellow metal is their biggest export, suggesting that citizens need to store them in either safety deposit boxes or even underground. Officials will need about 30 times the current annual output. Currently, Kazakhstan holds about 10% of its $2 billion in reserves in bullion. Precious metals bottom line. Well, the technical outlook remains solid still for the precious metals as the index continue to recover from last year's reaction. The XAU and silver remain above key support, and the dollar is still cooperating, adding further to the case of additional gains later in the year. Moving on to the Wall Street Report, mostly sunny skies persisted over the New York Stock Exchange ahead of next week's President's Day holiday, as investors poured even more funds into U.S. equities. By Friday's close, the Dow Industrials was up 354 points, 1.75%, finishing at 20,623. The S&P 500 added 35 points to last week's close at 2351 for the week, while the NASDAQ Composite picked up 104, 2% at 5838. Well, industrial powerhouse Boeing shares extended gains as the aircraft maker's South Carolina plant was visited by the new president. Shares picked up 1.15% on the news, rising for the seventh session, leading the Dow higher amid promises of America first and increased U.S. jobs. In addition, comments from the White House on Thursday indicated that the administration plans to introduce a health care plan and phase out the Affordable Care Act in March ahead of the proposed tax reform. More details will likely be forthcoming in the address to Congress on February 28th. Bottom line on U.S. equities. Well, the technical picture, still bullish for the sector, with the Fear and Greed Index inching even higher, touching frothy levels, but there's still plenty of room on the upside for further gains. In fact, current consolidation has a projection target of as high as 22,000 on the Dow as this runaway market continues. Coming up after the break, more GoldSeek.com radio. We'd like for you to stay with us. Bix Weir, analyst and researcher, has some great material for our silver aficionados. Welcome on your debut appearance here on GoldSeek, Bix Weir.
Hey, thank you very much for having me.
Before we get into anything else, let's talk silver. I think I mentioned before the discussion that you make some astounding claims regarding, I think, the prospects for AG. My listeners have had their eardrums worn out on the reasons behind why we need silver in every portfolio, everything from the astounding industrial applications that detractors try to use as a reason not to own silver. And so you've got some great material as to why even three-digit silver may be a low-ball estimate.
My interest in silver goes back 17, 18 years with GATA in the early days, and you know, we knew people were rigging the markets. We didn't know how. We didn't know exactly who it was. And we thought it was the banks. And you know, mainly it was gold back then. But you know, once you learn about the silver story and what's going on behind the scenes and how little there is left, you quickly make the realization that silver is a much better metal to own as far as potential for appreciation when the manipulation ends. I worked with GATA for 10 years, you know, with Bill Murphy and Chris Powell, trying to track down who's doing this market rigging, who's doing the price suppression. And I kind of split off in about 2008, 2009, because I think I discovered who was doing it and why they were doing it. And it's all done with computers and derivatives. As we know, the amount of derivatives that are traded vastly exceed the amount of physical metal out there. So, my work in the last 7-8 years has been tracking down, you know, who writes these programs to rig the markets, how rigged are they, what kind of volumes are we talking about such that they can slam the price of silver from $50 down to $20 with a click of a mouse. And that's kind of where this strange trip led me, and it led me right to the halls of the Federal Reserve and the U.S. Treasury. So we go from there. They have full control right now, and I do believe that they will let go of that control at some point. And that's when you want to be in physical silver, holding it in your hands and ready to ride that price to the moon.
Exactly. This is what I wanted to get into today. I want this to be the focus, the crux, at least, of the first part of this discussion. Your seminal research into the computer algorithms and programming behind the scenes that allows, let's just say allegedly, because from what I've read and what I've heard in previous interviews, this is really groundbreaking stuff.
Well, it is, and it goes back to the early days of computers back in the 60s and 70s when, you know, computers were just being really invented. And the first shareable computer program was a program called BASIC. And BASIC, I don't know if you remember it, but it was written by a guy named...
I cut my teeth on BASIC.
Yeah, if you took any computer classes in the beginning, you had BASIC, you had Fortran. But the very early days, it was BASIC because it was the first shareable computer programming language. Now, the guy who invented BASIC was a guy named John Kimony. And John Kimony, really brilliant man, basically invented the ability for individuals to program and use computers back in the 1960s. But his best friend was a guy named Alan Greenspan. And Alan Greenspan, as we know, used to be a huge gold bug. I mean, he wrote the paper Golden Economic Freedom, and he was a gigantic gold bug, but most people didn't know that he was a computer expert in the 1960s. Writing programs using John Kimony's basic computer language, Alan Greenspan was the first guy to invent the banking programs that we use today. You know, today we look around, it's like everything is electronic money. There's very little physical money and very little gold and silver. It's all electronic. But Alan Greenspan was the guy who wrote the very first programs, and he was working with Arthur Burns, who was his mentor. He was the head of the Fed at the time. But Alan Greenspan actually blamed himself for the Y2K problem because he was the guy who programmed only two digits instead of four. So it really goes back to the very early days of computers and how the Federal Reserve Bank and Alan Greenspan and a couple other people within that close circle invented these computer programs to rig the markets in order to go off a gold standard. Because normally when you go off a gold standard, you've got, you know, 8 to 10 years before it all falls apart. Unless you rig the prices of everything from gold to silver to oil to all commodities to the stock market. And you can do that if you have control of computer programs. And the reason I found all this out was documentation that came out of the Federal Reserve Bank of Boston. Talks about this. It's a comic book that talks about this character, Ruta. Root A, which is a term in the very early days of basic computing. It is the root foundation of our monetary system, of the programs behind the scenes that run on a monetary system. So all that came out, and then there's so many items that I would connect and link, and you can see it today with the volumes that are traded of silver on the COMEX. I know a lot of people say, oh, it's traded 100 to 1. It's so fraudulent because, you know, 100 times the electronic metal is trading versus the physical metal. That number is very wrong. It's not 100 to 1. It's over 2,000 to 1, and that's just on the COMEX. So people need to get their head around the idea that the price of silver can be manipulated and suppressed with a click of a mouse from the basement of the Fed or the Treasury. That's where they have their trading rooms. A really interesting stuff, a lot of backup documentation and information and things coming out that are really confirming what I've long suspected, which is there is a plan to control the system via computers by controlling gold and silver prices, and there is a plan to destroy the mechanism that controls it by printing so much money that people won't accept it anymore. And that's kind of where we are with the United States.
Who'd have thought that Sir Dr. Alan Greenspan is Mr. Robot, is Elliot? It's better than science fiction. Major hat tip for, I think, being the first to uncover this and make it public in a very easy to understand way. Can you give us a quick synopsis, 3 bullet points from your excellent article that we've already published? We're going to publish again and keep disseminating it. But 3 of Bix Weir's favorite bullets for why silver is a three-digit plus metal and how it's going to get there.
The first one, and the most important, if this manipulation ends, which I think it will at some point, it's going to come down to who has physical in their own possession, physical silver in your own possession, not held anywhere else. And that's where the key is. The silver-to-gold ratio is artificial. It is not the price ratio right now at 70 to 1 or something like that is ridiculous because the availability of physical gold and physical silver is right around 6 billion ounces each, which is a 1-to-1 ratio. And gold is great. I love gold, but there's a lot more gold than they're telling you out there. And you don't really need gold for anything other than storing it for monetary reasons and jewelry, maybe. Silver is a completely the opposite story. You need silver for monetary purposes. It's the most used monetary metal in the history of monetary metals. But the key is technology has changed. Technology consumes silver. It doesn't save silver like gold is saved in a vault. Technology consumes silver. So most of the silver that has ever been mined in the world, which is 50 to 60 billion ounces, is now in landfills, is on the top of roofs and in solar panels, is exploded smart bombs. It is scattered in little tiny pieces all around the world. So that 50 to 60 billion ounces that was available potentially maybe 50, 60 years ago now is all gone because it's been distributed in little tiny bits in landfills and your cell phone and your flat screen TVs. So the difference between the price ratio of gold and silver versus the amount of available physical of each is night and day. And that's why the biggest reason I think at some point in the future when the silver rigging stops in the electronic markets, I believe that silver and gold will cross 1-to-1 ratio, which is a gigantic move, obviously, from where it is today.
For our high school econ majors, you know, or college econ majors, an inelastic demand curve. It just basically means that we need so much silver. Okay, it's so integral to our manufacturing and production. You mentioned solar panels and photovoltaics. Nevertheless, we have tons of the stuff just in soldering. It disappears forever. The soldering in your laptop, your cell phone, in the walls, in the doors. Oh, how about just light switches? It's gone forever. It disappears, and it's an incredibly useful substance, the most malleable, the most reflective, arguably the most electrically conductive, antimicrobial, it's an antibacterial, probably even antiviral. Let's look at the drachma in Greece. I think there's a 600-700 year period of stability where the only real money in circulation for the most part was a silver coin. Fast forward to the United States, 100 years of economic dominance and stability. And what did we have in circulation by law? You know, drum roll, please. Up until recently, but the bad money has driven out the good. Thank you, Mr. Grisham. So here we are today, Bix. Where does this all lead?
Well, I think we're coming close to that point where we're running out of silver. And the reason I think this is something that happened in 2016. And not many people have commented on this, but we all know the COMEX and the LBMA, they don't trade real metal for the most part. Mostly it's futures and options contracts. It's all futures and options on the COMEX. The COMEX volume for silver went up 45% in 2016. This is an unbelievable number, but in electronic contracts, they were trading an average per day of 400 million silver ounces. The need to rig the markets and control the price of silver is getting harder and harder for these people. And if you look at if you take the average daily volume of silver traded on the COMEX and you expand it out to say how much silver was traded on the COMEX in 2016, it's over 100 billion ounces of silver, which is ridiculous, as we all know, because there's only been 50 to 60 billion ounces ever mined. So it's getting harder and harder to rig the silver market. Gold is just the same. Gold's up 51%. The amount of derivative trades versus how much physical silver is out there. To control the price, they need to layer more and more derivative trades on top of it. And that's how the prices are getting rigged. And we had a great confession from Deutsche Bank, and they turned in all their friends of market riggers. And the CFTC hasn't done anything about it. There's a lot of news to come out about that in the coming months and years, because this is an admission of what GATA has been saying for years, that the bullion banks rig the gold and silver markets. This is an admission in court, and there's a list of banks, and all those banks that are on the list of those who got turned in are on the LBMA. There's five members, clearing members, and they're all on that list. So, yes. GATA was correct all along. The silver price is rigged. The gold price is rigged. And you need to get in before the rigging goes away.
All right, Bixware, what about the skeptic in the audience saying, what's this I hear about silver shortages? Isn't silver a major byproduct of nickel and particularly copper production?
Well, I say that's a great example of what we're going to need going forward. I mean, how much silver, physical silver, is really out there? Nobody really knows. According to the LBMA, they claim to trade over 129 billion ounces of physical silver every year. Again, another report that's completely ridiculous. The fact that the amount of silver mined and available is going to grow is true. And the same is true for the amount of uses we will find for silver. Silver is still the best conductor of electricity. We are living in a technological age, and those inventions and technologies that Donald Trump talked about in his in his inauguration speech are coming true, and they will stop holding back the ability for people to create and innovate new electronic forms of energy, forms of communication going forward. Really exciting for silver, and I'm glad that there's more silver. Bring it on. Bring on as much silver as you can, because they're printing up way too many dollars, and what we need to do is get rid of the electronic fake silver that's traded on the COMEX and the LBMA.
I'd like your thoughts on what happened recently during our presidential election. I think, in fact, it may have been the actual day. In India, I'm bringing this up to all of our guests in the past couple of weeks, and price spike up to over $3,600 a moonshot on the yellow metal on news that they would be returning to a more digital currency. Folks might say, well, it's India, it's contained. But I worry if it's not really the canary in the proverbial mineshaft. What happens when people en masse really wake up to the idea there's something wrong here with our greenback?
You got to remember that price is determined on the COMEX and the LBMA, and for gold, they have on the COMEX, 27, 28 million ounces of electronic gold trade every day on the COMEX. So these numbers are not real that you see, the $1,300 or $1,200 or the $18 for silver. These are not real numbers. These are electronic computers trading back and forth. The majority of these trades are the bullion banks working for the U.S. Treasury and U.S. Fed. The whole concept of, oh, it spiked, the price spiked because of something else is kind of irrelevant, because it really doesn't matter. They control it with a computer. They can change the price from $1,300 to $13,000 to probably $100 with a click of a mouse, because it's unlimited the amount of sell orders that they can put in if you're the U.S. government and the Fed, because you don't have the CFTC watching you, obviously, because you know they haven't come down on the silver or gold manipulators. So, yes, there are a lot of signs. You can give me a million different signs why silver and gold should spike. But the question is, how high should it spike, and how high will it spike without the manipulators and their, you know, trading electronic contracts back and forth? That's the real exciting thing. Everything else, we've been arguing these points since, you know, the 90s, how gold should go up because they're printing so much money. And, you know, there's 50 million reasons. But ultimately, it comes down to who controls the price of gold and silver with what computer programs, and when they're going to end that game.
Who controls the price of the precious metals, and what are the implications, please?
Well, it's the Exchange Stabilization Fund. It's run out of the basement of the U.S. Treasury and at the Federal Reserve. The basement of the U.S. Treasury has a trading floor, computer trading floor. The Federal Reserve Bank of New York runs the operations from the New York, and then they've got the bullion banks and people like J.P. Morgan, who actually admitted in court in the lawsuit in 2003 that they were an agent of the U.S. government. It was a lawsuit by Blanchard and Company against J.P. Morgan and Barrick Gold. And in their memorandum asking the judge to throw out the case, J.P. Morgan said, we are an agent of the U.S. government. You can't sue us because we have sovereign immunity. That sums it up right there. That's why you don't see J.P. Morgan's name in all the lawsuits for silver manipulation that are coming out of the Deutsche Bank situation. So, yeah, it's all done out of the basement of the U.S. Treasury and U.S. Fed using the Exchange Stabilization Fund. Real interesting thing now, they've put Steve Mnuchin as the head of the U.S. Treasury. He was the head of computer trading at Goldman Sachs. And that's a really scary deal. They tried to get Vincent Viola as head of the Navy. He was the head of Virtu Financial, which is a computer rigging company that is in charge of the SLV and GLD rigging operations behind the scenes. So, yeah, I don't know if Trump's going to continue the market rigging or stop the market rigging, but there's enough countries in the world that know exactly what the U.S. is doing that I think it's a good time for the U.S. to stop doing it, because it's no longer beneficial. All the metals going east, is no longer beneficial for us to rig the markets when China's cleaning our clock. So I think it's time to end this game and go back to free markets, where you have people walking into exchanges with metal and with money, and the exchange happens and then they walk away.
Then in this chaotic system, what will be the tipping point? What puts us over the edge?
It's going to be a click of a mouse, ultimately, that ends the rigging of gold and silver, which will end everything else, because there's so many derivatives piled on to all these things I've talked about. And everybody talks about that, you know, hundreds of trillions of dollars in derivatives that almost imploded in 2008. Well, we're at that point again. The next time that someone like Hank Paulson goes into Congress and says, you know, we need $700 billion to bail out the banks or the whole world's going to end, the next time they're not going to bail out the banks. They can't. It's going to be, they're going to be going to Congress for $20 trillion instead of $700 billion. And the people have learned so much in the past 8-9 years that they're going to say, no, we're not going to allow this game to go on. And then we're going to have to start something new. And that's a whole other discussion. But there are plans for that at the Fed Boston, and that I talk about in my Road to Ruta work. And it's real interesting. And I think we could come out of this pretty good. But a lot of people will lose a lot of virtual assets.
Obviously, our officials have carte blanche opportunity, deep pockets, or maybe they have the deepest of pockets. As you mentioned, they're in cahoots, if you will, with J.P. Morgan, and that's nothing new. I mean, go read about the actual J.P. Morgan himself, even the creation, as I understand it, of the Federal Reserve. This is nothing new. Obviously, there's going to be people listening to our voices who own StreetTrax SLV, you know, the silver ETF, and there are other paper promises out there. It seems as though you would be an advocate of physical precious metals.
Definitely. All our exchanges today, the stock markets, the COMEX, the LBMA, are all run on fractional reserve systems. And you can tell by the volumes traded. If you look at SLV and GLD, first of all, they allow shorting, which completely it takes away from the fact that you're supposed to be buying physical when you buy a share of SLV or GLD. By allowing shorting, people are buying thinking they own an ounce of physical silver when they don't, because it's been shorted. That's one problem. Another problem is the amount of the volume traded on those exchanges, and all exchanges in stocks and bonds and currencies. They trade in huge rehypothecated fractional reserve system. So SLV, I don't know what the total float of SLV is right now, but it's usually 10 to 15 days everything trades because of these high frequency traders. You know, they have trades going off at the milliseconds, and a lot of these trades are never settled. Settlement meaning the contracts are exchanged, the money is exchanged, and the share is changed into your name. That doesn't happen anymore, and the SEC has even said there's over 200 million shares not settled every single day on the stock market. The problem is when the music stops and these derivatives go off, you're going to have 10 to 15 people saying, oh, I own a share of SLV for every share there is out there. So it's a fractional reserve system. They all deal on net pools. All these brokerage houses deal on net pools. At the end of the day, they net out their buys and sells, or they're supposed to, and they still can't even do that. So very, very problematic. And then if you have the banking crash, you've got another problem, because there are counterparty risks between you and your money, because all these brokerage houses use the banks. The banks go down, the brokerage houses go down.
It's reminiscent of MF Global, maybe mixed in with a little Bear Stearns and Lehman Brothers.
Those were one-off instances that were able to be contained. It was difficult to contain them, but they were able to be contained. This is going to be everything at the same time.
Systemic. And I know that folks are then wondering, what's next? I think you alluded to that. I mean, we've been speculating here for several months that you might see a cryptocurrency backed by either silver or gold or some other means. But, I mean, we've never had a totally global, interconnected, fiat-based system with very few exceptions.
I agree, except it's not just the global fiat currencies. Everything has been put onto an electronic disk and electronic storage. So people think they're assets. If you ask people in the early 1970s and you said, would you accept owning an electronic virtual asset over your current asset? They'd say, no way. Are you kidding me? An electronic blip would be used as an asset? Well, now everything is an electronic asset. And everything has been rehypothecated so many times, and it's such a fractional reserve system. Nothing is going to survive this in the electronic form. Now, I think Bitcoin will, because it is nobody's debt. The interesting thing about the electronic assets is they're all somebody's debt. They all rely on a third person to stay in business. Bitcoin doesn't. It is an electronic asset unto itself. As long as you don't hold it in a third-party storage place, you know, like on an exchange or in an online wallet, it's your asset. It's an underlying asset. Everything electronic else is usually people's debt and relies on a third party to stay in business. So it's so much bigger than the crashing of unbacked fiat money. This is a global buy-in to electronic assets being worth something when you try to cash them in. And there'd be so many defaults of the third parties that nobody's going to stay in business.
About half of America, 160, 170 million folks, half the households at least, have some exposure to equities, to U.S. stocks. And very few people understand the fact that these are just, you might say, illusory means of ownership. You really have a tough time even getting physical shares, the certificates, cut and sent to your home. What can you really do with them? You can't walk up to your neighbor and say, hey, you know, here's 10 shares of Google or 10 shares of Tesla or Netflix. It's really a game of musical chairs. And when the music stops, as you say, the whole system is infused with debt and everything is debt-based. I mean, is that not the whole concept of the fractional reserve system? We're not going to know what hit us, are we, when this edifice finally implodes?
And that's what is talked about in the Fed Boston documents that I've, you know, analyzed and looked at for the last 10 years is, you know, how do we reallocate assets going forward is a big thing that they talk about. And Alan Greenspan actually came up with a great idea. After the system crashes, his idea was to reallocate assets according to Social Security balances, which is very unique because what it does, it kind of rewards the people who've made the most money and worked the hardest, but not, you know, extraordinarily because, you know, they cap Social Security balances every year, how much they take out of your paycheck. So it kind of, and it gets the older people who paid mostly into Social Security, they get most first because you got to take care of the old people first. So it's a great idea, but even in the Fed Boston comics and in the teacher's guide to these comics and in the discussions they have about it, they say, we don't know if the people are going to accept something like this.
I'm a listener who bought silver in 2011 at the peak around $50, and I've been burned. I'm not happy about it. Convince me to hold it past 50, and where will it be? Where will it go?
Well, I plan on holding silver until the manipulation ends. So as far as where it would go, I don't really know. Most people don't know. The ratio between gold and silver is 70-1 currently, and the amount of physical available is probably 5-1, you know, 5 ounces of gold for every 1 ounce of physical silver because all the gold is being saved and all the silver needs to be used. So you can draw your own conclusions. I give many, many big numbers when I do the analysis because that's what comes out. Without manipulation, we're going to see somewhere, at least for a short time, somewhere around a 1-1 ratio, price of gold to the price of silver.
I have a bevy of additional questions. We'll have to save that for another chat. Bix Weir, please tell people more about Road to Root A, what they'll find, and why they need to bookmark that site.
RoadToRuta.com is my website. I have a YouTube channel, Road to Ruta. It has a video on there explaining what the Road to Ruta theory is because it takes a little while to get used to it. Come on by, put your email in, and you'll get free emails on information that I look at every day.
Great stuff. Can't wait to have you back.
Great. Sounds good.
Rob Kirby, macroeconomic analyst formerly on the trading desk. He knows what's going on behind the scenes, and that's why we'd like to hear his thoughts. Welcome back, Rob Kirby.
Pleasure to be with you, Chris.
Great to have you. You know, we've had another good solid year. Silver up over 14%. XAU still on fire. Never really even hiccup. Give us an idea of what you see in the precious metals market.
What I see in the markets, Chris, is that both gold and silver are still not trading in what I would consider to be a free market. And much of our capital markets, in my view, represent little more than a massive crime scene. We see the long arm of government control in not only the precious metals arena, but we see it in various currency markets, and we see it very heavily in the bond market. And to put your listenership sort of in the picture in terms of a free versus a highly manipulated and distorted market, I would suggest people take a look at the way that Bitcoin currently trades. And you will have a pretty good idea if you watch Bitcoin for a few days the way a real free, freely traded market actually operates. The reason why Bitcoin is able to trade and operate somewhat as a free market is because Bitcoin has a unique quality that isn't present in gold or silver or bonds. Namely, you cannot sell a Bitcoin that you do not own, or that has not been mined. But what this does is it takes all this optionality out of the trade in Bitcoin. And when I say optionality, or the rude manipulation of the futures markets, we did see in the aftermath of the U.S. presidential election on election night, we saw the market's initial reaction to the unexpected Trump win. We saw that immediately gold went up close to $100, and the stock market futures plummeted on that same news. But, you know, late in the evening, the apparatus that controls the pricing of so much of our markets in the Western world came to work, and they reversed those superior gains in the precious metals, which intuitively was correct. The tremendous drop in the equity futures, which was intuitively correct. And these movements were reversed by force. In the case of gold, literally in paper form in the 72 hours following the presidential election, more than three times the globe's annual production of gold out of the Earth's crust was sold in paper form inside of 72 hours after the election. What this amounts to, Chris, it's gold that, A, does not exist, and technically it's gold that will never exist for sale. And it's through the selling of these paper products on futures markets or digital markets. A lot of people refer to this as paper gold, but this enables the price managers, which in my books is the U.S. Treasury, are able to keep the price of gold suppressed, meaning that the alternative to the precious metals, or sorry, to the dollar, being the precious metals. They want to keep their fiat money backed by nothing, looking superior to real money, which is precious metal.
Cryptocurrencies are something I've dabbled with personally, primarily a silver-backed cryptocurrency I call Silverbit, piggyback blockchain off of Ethereum. And any of my listeners who know, Ethereum is, I think, going to overtake the rest of the cryptocurrency space eventually. That's just my personal opinion. At least it has the opportunity. But back on point, they've sort of let the genie out of the bottle. And we talked about this in last week's show. I mean, Gresham's Law, bad money drives away the good money. Our authorities haven't really grasped yet, and maybe this is a topic for another show, there's a new bad money. Of course, we don't think of it as bad. We don't think of this revolution in bitcoins as being bad, but it really is a totally, in many ways, free money, unless we want to get down to the heavily energy and algorithm intensive. The Chinese are way ahead of us on this because they have access to virtually free energy, as I'm sure you know. I really wonder if the Fed and the Treasury and their economists have pondered and examined just where this is going to lead. The dollar's reserve currency status, I don't think it can survive, can it? A competing money.
I would respond to that by saying the rise in the popularity and the usage of cryptocurrencies, in my view, is the manifestation of the law of unintended consequences. Because it's my belief that naturally, in a freely traded market, gold and silver would have risen very, very dramatically and sufficiently that they would be currently expressing themselves as very, very meaningful, viable alternatives to fiat currency, which has been extremely mismanaged by the stewards of the world's reserve currency, the U.S. financial elites, and the central banking community around the world, because the European Central Bank is doing a very poor job as well in managing the euro. My view that the the rise of the cryptocurrencies has happened precisely because gold and silver has not been allowed to do and perform its historical function. And the rise of the cryptocurrencies is showing us, or is the manifestation of humanity's dislike and lack of trust in fiat money. People intuitively know when they're getting a bad deal, and you see, it's like water finds its level. If you try to put 2 gallons of water in a 1 gallon pail, the 1 gallon that cannot be contained in the pail finds a resting spot elsewhere. And the rise of the cryptocurrencies is effectively the faith which has been displaced from fiat currencies finding its place elsewhere. And this will continue to accelerate because the clowns running our global fiat money systems have no plans other than to continue to create more fiat money at increasingly swift rates.
But what officials have done by corralling the gold and silver markets in such fashion, using the most unbelievable paper schemes since, I think, arguably, the great revolutions in France, just hasn't been anything like this since John Law. You have an inevitable filling of the void, this brilliant algorithm we call Bitcoin. Is it possible that even Bitcoin will eventually have inherent limitations, many of which we already know and we've found? Folks will turn back to that barbarous relic.
I believe so. But what I find fascinating about it all, Chris, is the sheer irony in what's occurred. Because what the managers of our fiat system have tried to pull on humanity by employing algorithms and futures and derivatives, they've attempted to limit the rise in the price of gold and silver using these algorithmic computer-assisted trading schemes, and it's going to be an algorithm that undoes them. So currencies are algorithms.
I think it's just as ironic, a Satoshi, the smallest denomination of a Bitcoin, we refer to as a Satoshi, which of course also the name of the creator. Is it possible that this was really little more than a CIA side project? I think someone would have stepped up and claimed responsibility at $1,000 a Bitcoin right now. I mean, keep in mind, just a few years ago, it was pennies on the dollar. From what I've read, Satoshi put aside, I think it's $500,000, and then the rest were placed in the blockchain. So I'd like your thoughts on whether or not this might just be a CIA operation or KGB, a parallel, you know, monetary system.
Well, I do believe that necessity is the mother of all creation, and it's been the poor stewardship of our global fiat monetary system. It's the manifestation of the failure of Keynesian economics that has given rise to the advent of these cryptocurrencies. Without a doubt, exactly who's created it, I don't claim. Look at the current system. I mean, we can examine. I mean, it was just last week there was a paper made public by a chap by the name of Grant Williams. And if you go to YouTube and you plug in the name Grant Williams and along with the words mines and money, you will see a presentation which was given late last year at a big conference, and I believe it was in Singapore at the Mines and Money Conference. It's an annual event. What he illustrates in a very, very, very short space of time in this YouTube video is how the world is de-dollarizing. In de-dollarizing, he illustrates how crude oil is being transacted in other than dollars between major parties in the world. And when other countries deal in crude oil, big enough countries deal in crude oil in sufficient amounts in non-dollars, the amount of dollars they need to hold in their reserves lessens over time. What we have seen empirically, and Grant Williams illustrates this in his YouTube video, countries like China and Saudi Arabia have actually begun to lessen their holdings of U.S. government securities. And they've been doing this at quite a rapid clip now over the past 18 months to 2 years. And the implications for this on a go-forward basis, when you take into consideration that China and Saudi Arabia are historically two of America's biggest financiers and creditors who buy up the American debt when it's issued, they are holding less today than they were 2 years ago. And what this means is, and people should be asking some very serious questions about what the implications of this are, if China and Saudi Arabia are buying less, who's picking up the slack? Because America continues to run massive deficits. So not only do we have problems consuming or allocating the outstanding debt, we're still piling on, I don't know, roughly at least $1 trillion a year to the outstanding. So who's buying the bonds, Chris? That's my question, and nobody seems to be able to give me an answer that I can stomach or believe. Who is buying the bonds?
This is a rhetorical question, I feel.
Yes, I have a theory on exactly who's buying the bonds. It's my belief that the Exchange Stabilization Fund in America is actually buying these bonds with dark dollars that aren't even admitted to exist.
The plunge protection team.
But it's my belief that debt is being bought by America in dollars that do exist, but they exist on the dark side of the U.S. Treasury's ledger. Because they are dollars that are purchasing this debt that's being liquidated by foreign holders, it cannot show up in the reserve accounts of any other entity. And as such, this debt moves to the dark side of the U.S. Treasury's ledger because that's where the dollars came from that were used to purchase it. We've heard stories, or at least I've heard stories, over the past number of months that the world is actually suffering from a condition of too few dollars. And anybody who actually believes that, in my view, given everything that we empirically know has occurred, the fact that countries are rebuking the dollar and are trying to liquidate their reserves or lessen them, to me, speaks absolutely against the notion that there are not enough dollars in the world.
I think it's just like anything else, you know, like a VCR. I mean, it's going to carve out its own spot and maybe eventually overtake the currency space, or maybe just move in parallel, as we still have movie theaters today. But think of it as a diversification tool and not as a substitute for the precious metals, because if the power goes out, if there's a major emergency and whatnot, good luck getting, you know, your local folks, maybe even neighbors, to accept even a private Bitcoin wallet that's separate from your hard drive. It's just not going to work. Whereas, you know, junk silver and small denominated gold coins will be your go-to asset in times of trouble. And I think it just always will be the case.
I was just going to say, Chris, I think you stated it very accurately. Fiat currencies, whether it be dollars, Reichsmarks, Zimbabwean dollars, or the fiat currencies run from, as I've heard it before, from A to Z, a currency that begins with the letter A. I guess you could say the American dollar, really, I guess, begins with A to Z, being Zloty, which is another failed fiat currencies. But fiat currencies come and go. Gold and silver endure.
Rob Kirby, please tell people more about the services you provide and what they'll find when they reach you.
Well, you can find a lot of educational material in archives at my site, and new material as it comes along. And you can catch me on the web at KirbyAnalytics.com.
Going to look forward to having you back on the show.
Pleasure being with you, Chris.
This is Robert Ian with GoldSeek.com Radio. I was listening to a post this week from my friend Greg Manarino at TradersChoice.net on his YouTube channel, where he nailed it regarding Janet Yellen and her televised comments this week, where she referred to the U.S. economy as weak. The title of his posting caught my attention, where he said, "Alert! 8 years of lies evaporate in 30 seconds. I quickly located a 1 minute 37 second video on Bloomberg's YouTube channel entitled "Janet Yellen, Weak Economy Calls for Low Interest Rates." As of Friday, February 17th, this video had less than 2,000 views. Yet it represents one of the most important stories most people have never heard. We've been led to believe by mainstream financial media that we've been in a, quote, recovering or strong economy the past 8 years. Listeners to this show and many other direct media outlets have been aware that the opposite has been true. Yet the in-your-face, bald-face lies repeated over and over again, ad infinitum, have browbeat consumers of mainstream media content into believing that somehow, some way, the overall economy must be getting better, even if they are not seeing it or participating it in their personal or business situation. In recent months, the inventors of the fake news meme, the mainstream media and their ideologues, have skillfully had it turned back upon them and branded into their identity. But if we think about it from the perspective of what Janet Yellen said this week, it's clear the real inventors and pioneers in the fake news genre have been Janet Yellen, Ben Bernanke, and our good buddy Sir Alan Greenspan. I mean, it wasn't very long ago, mid-December to be exact, that the Fed raised interest rates for the second time in a decade and anticipated 3 more increases in 2017. What happened to that? Why isn't the financial media all over that contradiction from top to bottom? How do we go from 3 rate hikes in 2017 to possibly none in 2 months? Was the Fed playing politics? Let me share with you Janet Yellen's response when she was asked, "Is QE and this huge position the Fed has taken a deficit enabler? I'd be interested to hear your response on that." Wherein she replied, "We're very focused on achieving objectives Congress has assigned to the Federal Reserve, maximum sustainable employment, and price stability." She said, "We've had an economy with unemployment well above normal levels, and inflation is running well below our 2% objective. And the Federal Reserve is focused on putting in place a monetary policy that is designed to achieve those very important objectives that Congress has assigned to us." Then she said, "Because we have a weak economy, with a plentiful savings rate relative to investment, the fundamentals call for interest rates to be low, and we are allowing them to be low and fostering a low interest rate environment to achieve those important goals that Congress has assigned to us." There's a lot of kissing up to Congress in this response. Is she concerned that Congress may finally audit the Fed? Or take even stronger measures? She went on to say, "I don't think it would be helpful either in terms of achieving the objectives Congress has assigned to us, or in terms of Congress's deficit reduction effort for us to purposely raise interest rates in order to weaken the economy. The likely impact would be a weaker economy and larger deficits." In this last part of her comment, she said, "Raising interest rates would weaken the economy." Then why have the Fed and its surrogates been running around for 8 years playing head fake, and head fake with the specter of rising interest rates, when reality dictates otherwise? The Fed and its surrogates have been playing a long and dangerous game of fake news propaganda. We can only hope that their fake news propaganda will be part of the swamp that gets drained. And until next time, this is Robert Ian with ConquerChange.com, reminding you to follow us on Twitter at ConquerChange. Thanks, Chris.
Okay, Robert, thanks for another excellent installment. Well, that wraps up this week's GoldSeek.com radio episode. For two new big guests, be sure to check out next week's show. Until we talk to you again, have a great week. The gold and silver mining sector is red hot. Every investment portfolio needs precious metal shares. GoldSeek.com's top stock analysts have done it again, identifying the next solid gold nugget opportunity, Brazil Resources. Based in the eighth largest economy with a mining-friendly reputation, almost 10 million ounces of gold reserves, industry insiders are accumulating shares of Brazil Resources. The notable management team includes Chairman Amir Adnani, a rising star in the mining industry with a reputation for moving projects rapidly into production. Fortune magazine lists Chairman Adnani in the prestigious list of 40 under 40 ones to watch. Plus, shareholders benefit from the insights and backing of enigmatic Brazilian billionaire Mario Garneiro, CEO of Brazil Invest Group, the nation's foremost merchant and investment bank. And founding director, their São Jorge project is 100% owned with paved highway access, a nearby workforce, and a hydroelectric power source near the major gold deposits. Their next top project includes three deposits identified by major gold producers, plus their Ria project, which is a joint venture with Areva, benefits from a $10 million treasure map in the hottest address for uranium production in Canada. But the story gets even more exciting with their Whistler project, offering geographic diversification in South Central Alaska. To find out more about this unique opportunity, please direct your web browsers to BrazilResources.com. At Yahoo Finance, ticker symbol BRI.V. Remember to ride the exciting gold stock run of 2016 and beyond. Your portfolio will thank you for adding shares of Brazil Resources.
GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice. GoldSeek employees may or may not own shares. Nothing contained herein should be construed as investment advice.